Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast, where we are looking to grow the game any way we can. I also have a Coach's Playbook newsletter with some old editions that I'd love to send anyone who has never received one. They contain a myriad of information, ranging from ideas for your youth team summer camp, ACL prevention programs, and links to YouTube video breakdowns of specific offenses and defenses employed by some of the best college teams around. You can email me at wyattfaust@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at @KYPCoachFaust. Today we will be bringing on Coach Tim Hayworth. Aside from having one of the biggest smiles and brightest personalities in high school basketball, Coach Hayworth has quickly turned male into a basketball powerhouse. What does he attribute this meteoric rise so fast? Culture. Today, we will get into the culture buzzword, as well as why it pays to be willing to play different styles and more. Enjoy. Coach Hayworth came to Louisville male after a very successful run in Western Kentucky at Hopkinsville High School. Wins seem to follow Coach Hayworth, and there are some consistent pieces to his style and programs that have allowed that to happen. Heavily considered to be not just a contender, but a favorite to win the state tournament after winning the 7th region title this year, Coach Hayworth joins us today to talk about being able to play different styles, as well as why culture is king. Coach Hayworth, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm going to try really, really hard not to hijack this thing because I'm a big culture guy and I can talk about it forever. So if I'm talking too much, you can go ahead and cut me off, all right?
Oh, you're good. I love talking basketball myself too.
All right, man. So, you know, Mail was 17-14 before you came in, 22-10 last year, and now 31-4 this year. Now, those are some pretty big leaps in a short amount of time. I know we've talked some here and there, and you're pretty consistent, you know, in saying that culture is key. And, you know, it's been a buzzword for the last 5 years, so it shows that people understand the importance, in coaching today's kids. But I think actually establishing it, that's the hard part. So how do you begin to establish a culture at Mail, and how long does it take for your team to really, you know, so to speak, get the culture?
Right. Well, you know, as yourself taking over a new program and, it's style of play. And then, you know, I think the culture, I think it all goes hand in hand with one another. So like you have to figure out, you know, like what it is with each team, what your style of play is going to be. So, you know, like we know that at Hoptown and the places that I've been that, you know, we usually pressed a lot and, you know, and got after it defensively. You know, we want to score 70 to 80 to 90 points a game. You know, that's the style we want to play. But you've got to understand that sometimes your personnel doesn't dictate you to do that. So you got to figure out, even at teams at Hopkinsville I had, you know, we only probably pressed 15% of the time or whatever it was. So, you know, if we didn't have the athletes to be able to do the things that we wanted to do. So what I tried to establish here is you've got to try to play as hard as you possibly can as an individual player, and then bring your individual talents to the team and mesh them in. And so, you know, we work every day, like in practice, we do a plus minus chart, but we work every day on competing in drills. So whether it's shooting drills, whether it's hustle drills, rebounding drills, whatever it is that we're doing, we always have a winner and a loser. And so, sometimes a team has to run, sometimes the individual player has to run, whatever it is that we're doing for that day. So we try to make everything a competition. And then, you know, the more that you can make things a competition and then you reward guys for winning, then I think that brings to your team, I think it brings a sense of, hey, I want to win. And so once you get that established, then it only helps you as a coach because the game should be easier than the practice.
Yeah, sure. So kind of to build on that, you know, I love, you know, competition and drills throughout the course of practice, throughout the course of the season. And, you know, one thing I've found, though, is when I would chart, if you chart wins, everybody kind of gets on the board. But when you start charting some things, you know, I may want a certain guy to get a lot more shots than another guy. Well, you know, okay, they're going to get more of, you know, this or that. One thing that in the past that we charted that was big for us was screen assist because, but then again, only certain guys are going to be able to get those screen assists if you're not a screener. You know, how do you reward some of those other guys, you know, especially in
You know, you're looking at the role players. Those are the guys that you almost need to reward more. So how do you how do you do that? How do you incorporate that into those things to make sure that what you're charting kind of reflects that and gets those guys involved?
Right. So so with all of our, you know, if we go 5-on-5 or whatever it is, so you're only going to get certain, you know, not every practice, not every drill, but you've got to have a lot of it in your practice plan, where sometimes when you play, and you can't tell the guys this, you got to do it afterwards, is that we may go 5-on-5 segment, and the only thing I'm going to chart is diving on the floor, extra pass, offensive rebounds, deflections. So I don't even tell them, I don't tell them this before we play. So we might play and team A may defeat team B on the scoreboard, but I'll let them know, hey, we're on, the only thing we charted this whole game, we charted deflections. So team B had 12 deflections in this segment. Team A had 8 deflections. So team A, you're going to have to run, because that's what we were charting, or we in this certain segment we were running our offensive sets. The only thing that we charted for this whole 6-minute segment, we were charting who had the most extra passes. Team A, you had 3 extra passes for shots. You passed up a good one to get a great one. Team B, you had 2 extra passes. So team B, you've got to be on the line. So I found that that's the best way, because then you're rewarding all that extra stuff and they don't know it. You're not calling it out. So that's one way. And then also, you know, I had a guy this year, Elijah Priest, and even last year, and I've said this openly to him, to the team. I didn't know where he fit in our team last year. Like, I really didn't. So I was kind of looking, I was like, do we keep him? Do we do this? What do we do that helps this kid out? I need to tell him he needs to transfer somewhere, you know, because that's what's best for him. So anyway, we kept him. The kid ended up starting by the end of the year. And he does all the – one of the biggest winners I've ever coached. And he does all the little stuff. Now, he can score. He can handle the ball. He's a lot better than what I even thought he was, you know, with all those kind of things. But he absolutely – he'll take a charge. Even in the Ballard game, he made 2 huge plays in the Regional 7 championship. And then if you look at all of our players, you know, you're worried about Howard and Tyron and Jake and Noah and Caleb and all these guys, Dez and Cam Pope. But it's Elijah that will come in and hurt you. He's the one that's going to take 2 or 3 charges. He's the one that's going to get the loose ball. He's going to knock down the open. He's only going to shoot 3 or 4 times a game. He's going to make the big shot. That's the dude that's going to. So you've got to reward those guys, because it's easy. You know, we're going to play our main scores. You know, that's just the way coaches are. But you've got to make sure the guys understand that Elijah's playing and he's getting minutes because he understands his role.
Yeah, that's awesome. And making a big deal about those players, you know, I just think it sends waves through your program. And you know, even in the long run, that, you know, hey, you come in, you compete, and you do these little things, these intangibles that we're sitting here and we're telling you that we're charting in practice. And, you know, like, look, it does matter, you know, and it gets rewarded in the form of minutes. Because at the end of the day, you know, we can say anything we want. We can talk about everything we want. At the end of the day, kids want to play. And so it's great to get to reward that.
Right. That's 100. You're 100% right.
But man, Coach, going back to what you mentioned first there, talking about, you know, the team that wins on the scoreboard may not be the team that wins and has to run. You know, I think that is something that I think a lot of coaches could kind of employ, because, you know, to me, that just drives home the message that, you know, the little things matter, and it keeps it, you know, I think it's great to keep them focused through the course of a long season. And I really, really like that. That's something we're going to steal and start doing. You know, I think everything we do is, you know, the scoreboard dictates it.
Right, because here's what I used to tell them in Hopkins. So we could play, or even at Mail, we could play an inferior team, and you could not do the little things and still win just because you've got more talent. So you don't want to win games. Early on in the season, there's some games you're just going to have to win on talent, because you might not be where you need to be, obviously, by the end of March. But if you're talking February – and March or even late January, and you're sitting there and you're saying as a coach, man, we won that, we did so many things wrong, but we won that game on talent, then you've got problems. Like, you're not going to win it. Like, you're not going to win the, especially in the sixth and seventh region, mm-hmm. for your team or for my team, like, you will not win the big game. It just ain't going to happen, because against Ballard and Trinities and those type of teams, like in our region, like, you better have talent, but you better do everything the right way. That's the only way you have a chance to win.
Right. Yeah. And you know, like, I just, you know, that you talk about, like, digging into specifics in a culture and how to build a culture and build a winning culture. You know, that is an implementation thing. That's an intentional thing. You know, coaches, as a young coach, something I didn't really understand, or I definitely didn't value enough, as I didn't understand that culture is going to happen. I mean, it is in your program, either by accident or if you do it right,
right.
You know, it's intentionally. And, you know, so you've been there long enough in year two. I think I've really found that in year two, you start to see some of the signs or things that start happening that show that your culture is what you want, and it's where you want to get it established. You know, what are some of those things that show you that your culture is really setting in?
Well, you know, the fact that everybody does something for their teammate, you know, and the fact that, do you play hard? That's number one. Like, do you play hard? Are you the first one on the loose balls? Because if you're not, then they've not bought into your culture. Like, I'll tell you, last year we had a game we played absolutely awful in, and I was chewing them. And it was kind of like a make or break, because we were like, I think at the time we were like 11-8, because the style of play is so much different from what they're used to. And here's the thing, when you full court press, or like, you know, I'll hear people say sometimes, well, you know, that team's, they're not very, how do I want to say this? They'll say they're not very disciplined, or they're this or that. And I'll see a pressing team, and I'm sitting there thinking, do you have to be more disciplined 80 feet from the basket, or do you have to be more disciplined 15 feet from the basket? And my thing is, if you're picking up people full court at 80 feet from the basket and you're not playing hard, you get exposed. So what pressing does is it makes you play hard in practice and games. So, like, even during the summer, we run and jump pretty much the whole summer. Like, I don't care if we get beat 30. Like, we're going to run and jump, and we're going to play hard in the full court, because you can always back it off, you know. And so, but I think it makes your guys play really, really hard, because you get exposed. And then, like, if you watched our, you know, if you could have watched our district or region, I'm not sure we run and jump one time in the district or region. Now, we've got it in our pocket. If we want to run and jump, we can. But we played straight full court man, because my thinking is, I can either start off running, jumping, pick you up full court man, whatever it is. I can always drop back in a half court defense and be okay. But if you know that guys are totally bought in, you can pretty much run any defense you want to. Because they're going to play hard, they're going to do the things that you work on. And then, you know, if a player knows you absolutely care about them as a human being, because I was that dude, I'm telling you, I didn't play my last 2 years of high school basketball. I ended up walking on at Murray State, and I wasn't the best player in the world. But I tell you right now, if Mick Cronin, if he was here right now, and he asked me to run through a wall for him, I would say, man, that's going to hurt me. And there's no way I'm going to be able to run through that wall, but I'm going to try to. Because I know he cared about me as a person. And so if you've got that with your players, and they know, kids are smart. Like, and we know as adults, we know who's in it for the right reasons and who isn't in it for the right reasons. And so that's easy to pick up on. So I think number one is, as a coach, just trying to be the best person you can be. Not perfect, because none of us are, but being the best, like, have every kid's best interest in your mindset. And that doesn't mean that everybody gets treated the same. That doesn't mean that one player, like, everybody knows Tyron. And I tell our guys, I'm honest with them. If Tyron Moore comes down the court and turns it over two or three times, I'm probably going to bring Tyron over to the bench and talk to him and tell him what needs to happen. If a role player turns it over two or three times, he's probably coming out of the game. It's just the way it is. You know, LeBron James, and you got to be honest with them about it. And I think the more honest you can be with your players, the more they respect that.
No doubt, because I think it's refreshing for them. You know, how often do you hear that? You know, coaches, you know, there's a lot of coach speak that happens. And, you know, as coaches, we want to dig our heels in. We want to say, you know, if you come down and you take two straight bad shots, I'm taking you out. Well, okay, in the regional championship, if your best player takes two bad shots in the fourth quarter, well, hang in there, buddy. You know, we'll get it figured out. So, but I agree, you know, and I do think kids find it refreshing. And I think we sell them short some because they can spot a phony a mile away. And
yes,
I kind of want to shift gears just a little bit, but you know, talking about like kids now, I think understanding young people and just accepting that they are different today than they were 15 years ago is huge. Yes. Towards being willing to adapt how we lead and our willingness to change. You know, because I think kids are falling into one of two extremes. They're either living in abundance or abandonment. You know, some live in abundance and they aren't ready to grow up because, you know, they've got a parent or somebody that's just trying to prepare the way for them instead of preparing them for the way. They're not allowed to fail. And the real world just isn't designed for people to have their way prepared for them. So they just don't know how to handle that, you know, or the other extreme is abandonment, where they haven't had adults in their life who do enough, or they haven't had those role models or guides. And neither of those are their fault. That's what we have to get back to is everybody, you know, these kids, this is not their fault. And we need to coach each of them accordingly. It's different, like you said, for coaching kids. So, you know, have you adapted over the years? Have you seen that shift or what do you think in that regard?
Oh yeah. Like for sure. Like, so, and I even say it like for me, like I could be yelled at, like the more you stayed on me, the better I was. That's just the way I was. Like, that's how I wanted to be coached. I did not want you being soft on me. I didn't. But there's some of my teammates, you know, even players that I have now or what, some can take being yelled at, some can't. That's the big thing for a coach to figure out. Like, you have got – that's why I never understood coaches that come in, coach their team, coach their guys, and just leave. Like, and they don't spend any time outside of basketball. Like, that's probably my most enjoyable – thing in coaching is to be able to spend time with the guys outside of basketball. Like, even, and I'm sure for yourself, like, even after they graduate, isn't it the best thing that you don't have to yell at them anymore or get on it, and you can watch them play college ball, or you can just be normal with them and just be like, hey man, remember this, remember that. That's the most enjoyable part of coaching for me. And so you know, the coaches that doesn't know their guys, that doesn't know what makes this guy go or what puts him, like, our job as coaches is to never take confidence from any kid. You know, now the parents will do, like, let's just be real about it. If you put a kid on the bench that's been starting or a kid's not getting as much playing time, that parent probably is talking about you when you go home. So that kid already has a negative connotation towards your coaching style. So what you have to do is you have to try to talk to that kid and say, hey, at the end of the day, like, I want to win. Like, I got to do what's best for the whole team. Not, you know, I can't think about what might not play. Only five guys can play at one time. And so, you know, so the parents that constantly talk about the coaches, like, I'm sure they talk about the AAU coach, the coach they had in middle school, the coach, it's a progress. You know what I'm saying? And so you have to, as a coach, you have to try to figure out which one of those parents are, and you got to try to boost that kid up. Like, we want to be self-esteem boosters, not bring anybody down, you know? And so that's the challenge in coaching, is trying to figure that out. I tell them at their first parent meeting, and I keep to this. I say, if I hear you yelling at a coach or a player from the stands and we hear it, we take your kid out, because it's a culture that's trying to be built. Like, we ain't dealing with this. So, because if you have a parent from the stands yelling at you, you're horrible, put him in, da 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 da, that brings your culture down. So if you hear that, take him out. And then you go, and when the parent comes and talks to you at the end of you subbed him out, not me. Like, I told you what the expectations were at the beginning of the season. And that I found over the years, that just helps with everybody. And that doesn't mean that everybody's, hey, my mom, you know who she thinks should get Region 7 Coach of the Year every year? Me. Right now, I'm 39 years old. She'll say, well, I don't understand why you didn't get Region 7 Coach of the Year. I don't understand why you didn't get Region 2 in a year. So she wants me to get it every year. Okay. So you got to understand that. So that's parents. They want every parent out there wants their kid to play 32 minutes. And I get that. So you, as a coach, you have to understand that and not take anything personal, you know, but if they're yelling it from the stands, that's unacceptable. If they come and talk to you after the game, after a practice, like, I'm approachable. I know I hear some coaches say, I don't talk about playing time ever. Well, I do. I really do, because at the end of the day, like, you should be, like, open about it. And then they might not like it, but you should be open about it, like, and tell them why they're not playing. And, you know, and if they don't like it, then they don't have to come to the games. But I've just found – we've got a pretty tight unit over here at Mail, even with parents. I've got some really good parents. And, you know, and so I've found that that's helped me over the years, and just be really, really honest with it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that honesty, especially with those kids who end up sliding out of roles, it seems like, are the, you know, usually the hardest to keep on board. You know, if they were never really in the rotation, they kind of have that expectation. It's usually not as bad. But, you know, when you're, right, like you said, when you've built those relationships, you know, that's huge. I've heard Shaka Smart say, you know, if our relationship is 100% dictated on how much I play you, it's just never going to work. And, right, you know, to a degree, playing time, it is going to matter, but that can't be the foundation. And if it's not, then you can save those kids. And I think you can save your program, right, you know, and your culture. Yeah, I think, you know, kind of everything you're hitting on kind of makes me think about this thought I have a lot. And with today's kids, you know, leverage is the lowest form of leadership. You know, if I try to use my position as the highest form of motivation, so if I say, well, I'm the coach, I'm the adult, so you're going to do it my way, am I inspiring kids, or am I just, you know, doing it because that's the easiest way to do it and it's easy for me to say it? And, you know, so I think about that a lot. You know, I just don't think today's kids want to hear that. They don't need us, right, for content. You know, they can look up anything in the world on their phone faster than I can even tell them about it. So they don't need, right, us for information. They need us for context. Okay, how can I put this information that you're getting into context? And somebody is going to be giving them that context, whether it's in your program or outside your program. And if they love you, they'll listen to you, and you can put that context exactly how it is for them. And I just think if you're still coaching the way people coached, you know, when I was in school and 15, 20 years ago, where leverage is your go-to, I don't think you're winning kids, and I don't think you're champion, you know, you're being, right, a champion of your culture.
Right. I totally agree with that. Couldn't agree more.
You know, we sit here and we've talked about culture for 22 minutes, but at the end of the day, you better be able to coach a little bit now. And, you know, I think the coaching world's probably a little bit split when it comes to a willingness of, you know, hey, let me do what works and maybe play a different style if we need to, different times, or hey, we're going to do it this way and be great at it and let the chips fall, win or lose. What's worked for you, and why do you think it has?
Well, you know, like you just said, like, I think every team is different. Like, you might have this, you might be thinking, well, this is what we're going to do next year. But you might get in there and during summer, like summer basketball or, you know, the fall, and you might think, man, you know, we might have to do this. This might be the best thing. So every coach is different. But, you know, like, I think you have to play multiple defenses and have stuff to, like, I'm going to be honest with you. We won a regional championship one year. Henderson was really hurting us with penetration. This was early on in the game. We had not played a 1-2-2 point drop the whole year, okay? But we had worked on it starting in January. We had worked on this defense, and, I mean, we'd worked on it about 6-7 minutes every day in practice. It doesn't sound like a long time, but when you start working on something 6-7 minutes every day, then you get pretty good at a defense, and you can from January to March. And I felt like, man, I really got backed into a corner, and I thought, man, we're having trouble with this team. I mean, they were good, and we went to a 1-2-2 point drop, and I don't know how the game would have turned out without it, but we ended up winning like 56-38, and I'll never forget, we won the game, and it was totally not our style, okay? And we went to a restaurant, and a guy, I'm not even joking, he said, Coach, he said, I'm really happy we're going to the state tournament, but He goes, I just don't understand why we would change our style. And I said, you know what our style is, my man? I said, our style is to win.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do. And so you've got to be willing as a coach that if it doesn't work, let's just say that didn't work. That's what I felt was best for our team to win. But let's just say it didn't work and we got beat. You've got to be tough enough as a coach to take criticism and not to take things personal. We're in the one profession where, you know, if we went into any other profession, we went over and followed an electrician around today and we said, man, you're doing that wrong. Well, he would say, well, are you an electrician? And we would say, no. And so we wouldn't be, but everybody's a coach. Okay. So you've got to understand everybody's going to criticize what you do, or they're going to praise you for what you, whatever it is, but you got to be tough enough not to even listen to it. Like, and almost take it. And I've learned this over the time, but the more they start criticizing you and insulting you, the more success you probably had. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I hear people criticize Chris Renner. I'm like, well, you know what? I'll trade resumes with him. The dude been 8 times to the state tournament. He's had like 5 state runner up, 4 or 5 state runner up, whatever it is. Like, okay. Like, they can criticize him all he wants, but that dude can flat out coach and his results speak for itself. So like, you don't have to say, so you can say, well, he's this, he's that, but the dude wins. So, you know, so you just got to understand the more success you have. So, you know, as a coach, you just got to be willing to put that time in. Like, I watch a lot of college and NBA games. I do. And I record them. And usually what I do for the tournament, of course, I couldn't this year, but I usually record every NCAA tournament game. And then during the summer, I go back and watch every single one of them.
Wow.
So, and you can get so much stuff from other coaches. Like, all the stuff I've got is not Tim Hayworth. It's stolen from every coach that I've ever either worked under or I've seen something, you know, and you don't know what'll work. And if it gets you 4 or 6 points, a sideline out of bounds play, you know, or an underneath out of bounds, you know, focus on the, I'll see a lot of coaches, you know, I've seen coaches before and they'll spend 20 minutes in a practice on underneath out of bounds. And I just don't get that. I really don't, because how many underneath out of bounds plays are we going to have during a game? You know?
Yeah.
So I say, so, and I'm not saying that's not important, because it is. So you can get your 5 or 6 underneath out of bounds, whatever it is, get really good at them. And then for the tournaments, put 2 or 3 new ones in to try to get you some buckets. But I'm not going to spend 20 minutes of my practice time on underneath out of bounds when you're only going to have 7, 8 possessions of that. I'm going to try to look at a game and see where the most of the possession zone offense, man offense, you better have good stuff to run. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Against all sorts of defense, 1-3-1s, any kind of junk defense, like, you know, you just got to have some stuff to run against it. So that's what I focused on.
Right. I think being prepared for anything is kind of a marquee of a really good coach. You know, something that I try to explain to my kids, and like you said, they're smarter than we give them credit for. I think sometimes they, you know, they want to be in the mix, especially today's kids. And so, you know, we tell our kids, do we have a box and chaser play? Yeah. Do we have a triangle and two play? Yeah. It's something we're familiar with. But what we explain to them is, you know, we're spending a little time on this because, you know, when somebody plays something, some junk on you, and you immediately say, all right, guys, hey, they're in, you know, it's triangle and two, let's go whatever play. And then you score. I mean, what that does to the other team, it's like, oh, they're prepared for this. You know, so hey, I think, Coach, it's bigger than
my first year to the state tournament, Steve Wright, who's a great friend of mine, he played a box and one, like started it in the second quarter, and it threw off our whole team. It threw off our whole game. And we had worked on it a little bit, but we like looking back on it as a coach, I was like, man, we didn't work on it against that enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was my first time ever going to the state tournament. So you learn. You know what I'm saying? So you got to learn from that. So guess what? There's no way Tim Hayworth is ever going to not have a team prepared against the box and one. Not to say that we weren't prepared. We had some stuff, but we didn't go against it enough in practice. And that hurt me because I was like, gosh, like, you know, I would have felt a whole lot better about it if we'd have worked on it a little bit more. I could have been okay with losing that game. You know what I'm saying? But we lost it. I kind of felt like, man, that might have been on me a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Right. So you just got to be honest about it. And I'm sure you've had games the same way. You know what I'm saying? Where you're just, man. And so as a young coach, like, you know, I was 30 years old. I'm 39 now. So I'm better prepared, you know, for those situations. But I think as a coach, sometimes you've just got to be honest. Like, everybody has weaknesses. Every coach has weaknesses, and you have your strengths. And so what you try to do at the end of the year is say, okay, where could we have got better at? You know, like, I watched a lot of film last night just trying to figure out, okay, what could we have done, you know, to be even a little bit better?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Or if we play this thing, if we get to play this thing in May or June, like,
All right, Coach, we're running out of time here. Last segment here. I'm going to put a full court press on you real quick. You got to answer everything in 10 seconds or less, all right? Who has the better food, Western Kentucky or Louisville?
Louisville.
All right, does high school need a shot clock?
Yes.
Should they see the state tournament?
No.
Who do you hate coaching against the most?
Nobody.
Yeah, good answer. All right, Coach, we appreciate your time. We'll have you on again.
For Coach Hayworth, this is Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. During this social distancing period, we will have new episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesday, we will have Coach Sam Williams from EKU, who in her first year has really turned around the Lady Colonel program, to talk about pitfalls and great plans to build a program or reboot one. Until then, keep getting better.